is David Mitchell. I'm the author of the book Black Songveen and a patron of the British Stammering Association, and you are listening to Stutter Talk.
Welcome to Stutter Talk, episode 303, recorded and published Sunday, October 16th, 2011. During this episode, we speak with Richard Perez Pena, a reporter from the New York Times, about a story he is covering regarding a 16-year-old college student who stutters. Earlier today, Stutter Talk published episode 302, titled Stuttering Across the Globe, New Zealand, in which we speak to three people in New Zealand about stuttering, self-help, and treatment in their country. To contact Stutter Talk, send us an email, stuttertalk@stuttertalk.com, or call 206-666-5340. Enjoy the shows. Hey everyone, welcome to Stutter Talk, changing how you think about stuttering one podcast at a time. I'm your host, Peter Reitzes, starting off the show, as always, with some good voluntary stuttering. On the line, we have Richard Perez Pena, who is a reporter for the New York Times. And from reading your previous articles, it looks like you're a Metrodesk reporter, Richard?
Not at the moment. Right now I'm on the education desk. I've mostly written for Metro in my career and also for National.
You've written two articles in this past week that have rocketed to national news here in the United States. I've seen them on the cover of Yahoo News. They've been widely emailed from the New York Times. And just some quick background, your stories have discussed Philip Garber Jr., a 16-year-old 10th grader who stutters, who was taking a history class at County College of Morris in Randolph, New Jersey. And the professor in the story is Elizabeth Snyder, who has more than 30 years of teaching middle school and 10 years at the college level. Can you give us the broad strokes of what happened between Mr. Garber and Ms. Snyder?
It's a little murky because I wasn't in the classroom, but essentially she sent him an email saying, and this was after a couple of classes had been held, she sent him an email saying, let me ask you to pose your questions to me after class so we don't infringe on other students' time, and let me also suggest that when I ask questions, you write down the answers rather than answering them verbally, and then we can talk about it afterward. And, you know, he took it, particularly the so that you don't infringe on other students' time part, he took that to mean you take too long to say the things you want to say because you stutter. And he does have a pretty serious stutter, and it does take him a long time to get things out. So he took great offense at that, and I said, now, wait a second. Were you sort of monopolizing class time? Were you asking and answering too many questions? Were you saying things that were kind of off on a tangent? Every teacher's experienced students who do that, whether they stutter or not. And he says, no, I wasn't doing that. His previous teachers told me that he wasn't like that, and a couple of the kids in the class told me he wasn't like that. My mind was definitely open all along to the possibility that the teacher had a legitimate point. Whether she expressed it correctly or not is another matter. So I wrote that initial article, and she declined to talk for that article. She was advised by the college to, you know, leave it to them, and they wouldn't discuss sort of the underlying merit thereof of what she had done, you know, the underlying dispute. All they would say is, look, we accommodated him like we accommodate anybody. He's been moved to another professor's class, and everything's fine now.
Okay, can I just jump in? You know, I'm really surprised that I haven't heard anybody say, wait a second, you know, why would a student be moved? I mean, you know, I try to put myself in his shoes, and I think, well, sure, if it's a bad placement, if you're having a bad experience, it would be, it's nice to have the option to move. But then there's a part of me that thinks, you know, a professor should have to, you know, handle and cope with all of her students. So, I mean, do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, he asked to move.
Oh, he asked to move. Okay.
Yeah, it was his idea. You know, whether they were encouraging him in that direction or not, I don't know.
Okay.
And, you know, in the teacher's defense, I would say that she was trying, in fact, to handle all students. You know, again, whether she worded it poorly or not, whether she was insensitive or not, I don't think that she had some horrible ill intent. It's hard to know, you know,
sure.
But, you know, she generally gets good marks from students. She's well-liked. She actually won an award last year for her work with children who are financially and or academically challenged. Well, I guess they're not children, but students.
Sure.
So, you know, the thing that surprised me immensely from the first story was that the reactions fell into two camps, basically. You know, judging by my emails and the reader comments that were posted on the Times website, one was, she's a monster, and the other was, how dare you make her look like a monster?
Mm.
You did her, you know, a horrible injury. And I was taken aback by both those reactions. I certainly didn't think she was a monster, and I certainly didn't think we made her look like one. But I've never been so wrong in my life about how a story was going to be received.
You probably couldn't have anticipated the intense interest that story received. I mean, I believe it was the most emailed story from the New York Times site for at least a day, which is kind of amazing.
It is.
Let me ask you a few questions. I actually looked for a copy of the email that the teacher sent to Mr. Garber, and I was expecting to see it posted on the New York Times website. Why didn't the Times post the original email so readers could see exactly what she said to Mr. Garber?
That's a really good question. It just didn't come up in our conversation, and it should have.
Did you see the original email?
Yeah.
Okay.
We absolutely should have posted it. It was an oversight. My editors and I just never entered into our discussion.
So Miss Snyder, Professor Snyder does not contest that she wrote those words.
Oh no, not at all. You know, she said that they were suggestions and nothing more than suggestions. But no, she didn't contest having written it.
I want to put this out there, and it might be very overly generous, and it might get me in hot water with some of my stuttering brethren, but is it possible that Ms. Snyder is just a really good person and she just messed up and didn't really understand how to best help Mr. Garber? I guess what I'm trying to say is, was she trying to be sympathetic in some way here?
I think that's absolutely right. And the idea that, you know, this has been taken as her, as I said, being some monster, really came as a shock to me. And it's the furthest thing from what I would have wanted people to take away from this story. And she has been subjected, frankly, to a lot of really vile abuse as a result of this, for which, you know, I feel some responsibility. She says that she was trying to gauge what his comfort level was, that was part of her intent. Now, that's not really stated in the email, but, you know, I have no real reason to disbelieve her. And she says he would have monopolized class time had I let him. He wanted to answer every question. And I should note for your listeners, while she didn't talk to me for the initial story, the reaction was so negative toward her that she called me up for a follow-up story.
When the initial story hit, people who stutter, including myself, really felt that Mr. Garber is very courageous. You shared in the first article that he held his hand for 75, Mr. Garber held his hand up for 75 minutes in a class waiting for Ms. Snyder to call on him. And then when you spoke to Ms. Snyder for the second article, she said, you know, I actually took that as being rude. You know, he didn't seem to understand that I wasn't calling on anybody, that this was a lecture and I had to get through it. Do you have any way of knowing which version of that story is true, or are they both true?
Well, he says that she did, in fact, call on other people during that class session. I mean, she says she called on no one. You know, I take her explanation with a little bit of a grain of salt, just because I think if somebody's sitting there with his hand raised the entire time, after a while you would have to take that seriously. You would have to think, there's something wrong here, you know, and wouldn't you explain, look, I'm not taking any questions until after it's over. I have a lot to cover. Please save all your questions until the end. And she, in the follow-up, she said, you know what, I probably should have just called on him in order to just get it out of the way so that he didn't think I was, you know, being unkind toward him. You know, it's a little hard to know precisely whose version to believe, but I, you know, just on a personal level, I think it's a little odd to let somebody sit there with his hand raised for over an hour.
Yeah, that strikes me as really odd. I mean, there's a lot of odd things from the reporting you've done. It strikes me as odd that it seems like from your reporting, the professor, Ms. Snyder, and Mr. Garber both agree that she asked him to send her an email with his concerns and to meet with her and a dean to discuss his concerns. Why didn't Mr. Garber do that? I mean, that sounds like at least the teacher, the professor, is trying to perhaps fix the mistake she made or just, you know, listen to her. I mean, why didn't he meet with her?
Oh, one thing I would say before answering that question is I forgot the other half of the thought. She said he would have monopolized class time had she let him, although that wasn't happening.
Okay.
And she also acknowledged that the amount of time it took him to get a statement out was a consideration.
Yeah.
Now, whether or not that's a legitimate consideration, that's a whole other conversation. But it's sort of the conversation that I hope the first article would prompt.
Yeah.
But in terms of his not following up with his concern, he acknowledges that he was supposed to write this email and didn't, and that that was a serious mistake on his part. But as for the later meetings with her and the dean, he says, I sort of saw that as an attempt at shutting me down, so I chose not to go. It wasn't an oversight. It was a decision.
Hmm. You know, that's really interesting. And I'll say the listeners of Stutter Talk know that when I was in graduate school, I faced some serious issues because of my stuttering. And I took those meetings with the dean. And, in fact, I even had somebody come with me so that I had a witness of what took place, because I thought, I don't like the way they're treating me because of my stuttering. I'm going to hear them out. I want them to hear me out, and I want to have a witness so that they can't say, you know, I said something I didn't or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have time for a few more questions?
Sure.
I was a little surprised, not displeased, but I was a little surprised at how quickly the college came out and said that Professor Snyder acted improperly, and that what Philip experienced, you wrote in your article, was in fact discrimination. I'm not used to seeing corporations or organizations respond like that. Were you surprised that they so quickly said that?
I was, and the cynical view of that would be that they hung her out to dry. They just made it all about her, and I got the impression that they made those statements without having first talked to her.
Mm. The sense from your reporting was, I mean, if the college asks her not to speak to you and then says she discriminated against a student, I mean, it basically, for that first article, she didn't get a chance to get her side out, and I think that's unfortunate.
I agree. I absolutely agree. I really didn't want to write something that was one-sided. You know, I think not having known what her version of the story was when I wrote the first article, I tried to anticipate what it might have been, talking about what I mentioned earlier, that there is always this phenomenon of the student who wants to monopolize class time, and that every teacher has to figure out how to deal with that. And further, there's this, like, running theme in our society. I mean, we see it in 100 ways these days. How do you accommodate the individual with special needs while minimizing the inconvenience to the group?
Right, yeah.
We see that in every imaginable way. The bus route I take to work, all the buses have wheelchair lifts, and every once in a while when there's a passenger in a wheelchair, the rest of us have to wait for however long it takes to load and unload that wheelchair, which can actually be quite time-consuming. Nobody questions that that's the right thing to do.
Mm.
Some people, though, do question whether it's right to wait for a stutterer to finish his sentence. And I just think that's an interesting distinction. I think Philip is right when he says that some people don't take it seriously as a disability.
I think that is a really interesting conversation that I want the stuttering community to have more of. I don't know if we're ready to have it so soon. I mean, I think we're in the phase now where, rightly so, everybody wants to support Philip. But, you know, I will say to you on air that that's one of the things that does concern me about the stuttering community, and I might get flack from this from my friends in this community, is that, like, recently I heard of a person who stutters who got really upset because somebody at work gave her an evaluation saying, when you present, I don't like it because you just read to us, or you read to us a lot. And the person who stutters said, she has no idea how hard I work on my speech, and it was so courageous of me to even speak at all.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm one of the few people I know in the stuttering world who'll say, well, wait a second, there's a listener, and we should hear them respectfully and politely. In fact, if they are being respectful and polite. But I think that's a conversation that's going to have to happen when the dust settles a bit.
Well, you know, in the legal world, they always talk about how law is made by hard cases. You know, the easy cases are not the ones that end up making law, usually. And Phillips is an extreme case. On the one hand, he has quite a severe stutter. I mean, as his mother acknowledges, you know, and he acknowledges, it requires some patience to have a conversation with him. On the other hand, he's an extremely smart kid with a lot to say.
Mm.
So that it really is sort of both ends of the extreme when you're talking to him. To me, he's like the perfect test of the principle. Where's the dividing line? And I don't know the answer.
And for listeners, if you just go to YouTube and do a search on Philip Garber's name, I mean, obviously stuttering changes in each situation, but from what I can see, he wasn't that hard to listen to. I mean, I'm obviously around stutterers all the time, but I mean, you know,
his stutter is worse now than it was when those videos were recorded.
Yeah, which makes sense.
It's actually worse now than it's ever been.
Because, yeah, with the variability of stuttering, it does sound like the professor was not patient with stuttering, at least at first.
Or at the very least, she didn't make clear what her concerns were and allowed him to think that it was only about the stuttering.
And that's a very fair point to make. I'm glad you brought that up. How did you first hear about this story?
A friend of his mother's knows someone who I know, and the word just sort of reached me through the grapevine.
I'm going to ask you a tough question here, but do you think Mr. Garber did enough to deal with this issue before? I mean, not that he has to, but do you think he did enough to deal with this before going to the media? Like, was this like the media was the last straw?
That's a good question. You know, I would say at first he did not go to the media. I came to him. I don't think that when the word was passing from him to his mother, to the friend, et cetera, that the intent was for it to reach the New York Times. Maybe it was, I don't know. But I called him, and in some ways I had to sort of pull the story out of him. I think he was a little reluctant, and he didn't want to get the professor in any trouble. And as he said, after all of this was over, he was horrified by the reactions, the anger that people felt against her. And he said, look, everybody's entitled to make a mistake, and most of them don't become national news. And he asked me before I wrote the first story if it was possible not to use her name. You know, he was definitely sensitive to her point of view. Now, could he have handled the whole thing better? Yeah, probably, and I think he actually acknowledges that. But he's also a kid.
Right, right. Do you have time for just two more questions?
Yes.
So the Star Ledger had an editorial where they said, I'll just quote it, Garber shouldn't have been singled out and humiliated in an email message, no less. Instead, the professor should have met with Garber in person and in private. I was a little surprised that they took such a hard line on that, especially since you reported that the professor did try to meet with him in private. Did the professor just send Mr. Garber an email out of the blue? I mean, or did she try to speak to him first before sending him an email saying, you know, maybe you shouldn't talk in class, or you shouldn't talk in class?
They had one conversation about it after a class. And whether the email was sent before that, and it was a very brief conversation, and that was where it was agreed that he was going to send this email that he in the end never sent. Whether her email was before that brief conversation or after is actually a little bit in dispute. I didn't get into it because I'm not sure that the answer matters very much.
Okay.
But it's not clear to me whether it took place just before or just after she sent the email.
It did seem that at first reporting, maybe she said to him, don't speak in class, and maybe the second report was, well, you can speak once in class. I'm not really sure that matters either, but did you get a clarification on that?
Well, she said that she told him that it was her intent to call on him once per class. She says she said this to him verbally. That was not in the email.
Okay.
He says nobody ever said such a thing. You know, it's impossible for me to know. There's actually surprisingly little about the factual circumstances that they disagree on. He says other people were called on in that class, and he doesn't remember her saying that she would call on him once per class. Those are really the only factual disagreements.
This is such a neat story because as a stutterer, I want people who really treat people who stutter wrongly to know it, you know, but I also want to keep them on our side. I also want to, you know, explain to them what they could do better the next time, like make them a friend of the stuttering community and not an enemy. And
the goal is to teach, not to punish.
There you go. Very last question. Do you have any plans to do a follow-up story on this issue?
I didn't intend to. I mean, I cover colleges and universities generally, so, you know, my mind is on dozens of other schools. If there's a reason, you know, to come back to it, I will, but I don't have any plans to.
Well, unless you have anything to add that I missed, I'd like to thank you for joining us on Stutter Talk.
Well, thank you for having me. It was a very intelligent interview. I appreciate that.
I appreciate you saying that because I know I will get angry emails for this interview. And and by the way, let me just quickly say I invited Mr. Garber and Ms. Snyder on to Stutter Talk, and they did not respond, at least as of publication of this show. And I still invite them on to come and tell their stories. And my only agenda is to figure out what happened and what we can learn from it.
Right. I don't think there are any bad people here.
Oh, that's a great way to end it. Thank you again, Mr. Richard Perez Pena. Take care.
You too.